Hi, and welcome to the Virtual Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Ring, and I'm so glad you're here. In the Virtual Classroom, I invite virtual teachers from across the country to sit down and talk to all of us about what it's like to be a virtual teacher. It is my hope that through our conversations, we can educate, collaborate, and of course, connect to build a tribe of virtual teachers. Thanks again so much for being here. Hey everyone, help me welcome Lindsay Howe to the podcast. She is the ACT, SAT specialist at her school. She has lots of tips and tricks, but today on this episode, that's not what we focus our time on. Lindsay was my very first interview and I was nervous and excited, but I really didn't know what I wanted to talk about yet. And so I had some general ideas and questions that I wanted to ask. And so I really stick to that in this episode. What we really talk about is kind of the beginning phases of becoming a virtual teacher, and which is really relevant right now as teachers are signing new contracts and exploring new avenues. And so I'm excited to share this interview with you, especially if you're looking for a different route. So without further ado, here's Lindsay.
My name is Lindsay Howe. This is my 14th year of teaching, my sixth year in a virtual setting. So at MGLVA, Michigan Great Lakes Virtual Academy. I love teaching. I've always loved teaching, but virtual has offered me kind of just a different view of kind of what education looks like. I talked to my husband about it at length before leaving my job, brick and mortar job, and venturing out into the wilderness of virtual. And we made the decision because I wanted a change. Not a change because I was necessarily extremely unhappy in my job, but for whatever reason, I felt like there was something pulling me in a different direction. And actually, the person that I took over for in the job that I left, my brick and mortar job, she had to teach for K-12, and I had actually never spoken to her, but her really good friend taught next to me. And she told me a little bit about, you know, the decision that this teacher had made. And so I hit her up and I was like, hey, tell me a little bit about this. And she hooked me. So I love it.
That's funny that you had to talk at length with your husband about it. Yeah. But I was pregnant with my son and I had gotten assaulted by one of my fourth graders. And he kind of made that decision for me. So I'm not doing this again next year. But I did have to work and I had heard about virtual schools, and one of my friends was teaching at the middle school version of mine and told me that they were hiring for the next school year. And I just immediately put my application in I talked to my husband about it, but it was like, I'm doing this. It's not something, yeah. It's not a, but thankfully he was on board too. So he didn't, he's just like, you need to work. Unfortunately, I can't support you and the kid without another income. So it worked out beautifully.
Good.
So knowing that we both came from traditional schools or brick and mortar, that word never wants to come out right, but that's why I say traditional school. What has been the biggest difference because there's probably going to be lots of listeners who are like you and me who were wanting to find a change, whether it be just wanting to look for something different like you, or looking for a complete change because you're tired of dealing with those types of things in a traditional school, or maybe you have a family and they have to work but want to be home with their kid. What has been the biggest change or difference between a traditional school and virtual for you?
You know, it's hard because I think that, you know, when I talk to, we'll call them the public, anybody who has misconceptions about virtual schooling, I often tell them that, I mean, we're so incredibly similar to a brick and mortar, a traditional school. But I think that one of the biggest distinctions is the fact that we have so much data at our fingertips. And I mean, I know that in a brick and mortar school, there's data, it's there. Because I was always in professional development, you know, asked to analyze data, but I just felt like it wasn't as authentic, as authentically used as we do. And I think that we use it on a minute by minute basis. And it's right there. So if I want to know how, you know, a student's advisor has spoken with a student, or if I know communication that a student has had with another teacher, it's right there. I can search for it. Or today I was working with another teacher who was struggling with our interim assessment. And I was able to get in and, you know, look at the kids' information, as opposed to having to walk into a classroom, get all of the information, walk out, do, you know, all of my digging. It's just right there. I can do it in 5 minutes. And I use it, I feel like, a lot more authentically, to really know my kids. Because another distinction is that, you know, I don't see them. So I learn about them, in so many different ways, as opposed to, you know, being face to face and, you know, seeing their facial expressions. So I love the data at my fingertips because I can often.
I will say that's probably the biggest difference for me too, other than the obvious, like, no recess duty, no lunch duty, no bathroom breaks, that type of thing. But yeah, I did notice one of the first things that when I came to OVCA was learning how to make a note and put that in their CUME folder or file or whatever. I'm like, I never did this in a traditional school, but those would have been helpful in a traditional school, seeing what that relationship was like with the previous teacher. So that's something that I love having access to, is not just seeing my own notes, but seeing other teachers' notes within that year or in previous years, if they had been with us before, and seeing like, hey, this kid responded really well to this teacher. Why all of a sudden is a student not, you know? And in a traditional school, I would have to walk down to the hallway. And I still do. I don't walk down the hallway, but I'll link that teacher and be like, you know, what was that? What was that like, to get a more rounded understanding of that student? But having those notes there to read and go over has been really helpful as well. So I totally agree with that. And you said that it's a lot like a traditional school. So what are some things that have been really similar with a traditional school and a virtual school?
I have noticed that a lot of the lessons, because I've taught English 9 my entire career, other than this year, because I'm SAT in career development. But I have been able to use a lot of the same lessons, or maybe the same concepts. Let's consider that. So, you know, I've taught Romeo and Juliet quite a bit, or Shakespeare in general. And so I have been able to use a lot of the things, we'll call them things, that I used in brick and mortar, and then translated that into, you know, this virtual setting. Because, you know, technology is such a huge part of education right now anyways. So I used what I used in brick and mortar, but, you know, you have to manipulate it a little bit. And kind of, I feel like now I teach at such a deeper level, and I feel like I'm able to, you know, monitor my students' progress a little bit more thoroughly. I can't speak to the idea of, you know, what Class Kick would look like in a brick and mortar setting, because I never used it, but it's obviously something that can very easily be used in a brick and mortar setting. But so the lessons, I can use a lot of the lessons, the connections. And I think that is something that I've always wanted to stress to people that don't necessarily understand the distinction between brick and mortar and virtual, and maybe even the lack thereof of distinction, is that the connections that are made between student and teacher in a virtual setting, is equally, if not more, you know, far-reaching and meaningful, because we know our kids, we see our kids. It might not be, you know, on video, but we see, we have these very, very deep conversations with our students. They seem to open up to us a little bit more, because it's a different way of opening up to us. So I think that my answer, unfortunately, is creating a distinction between brick and mortar. But, you know, my point is that connections are there. And I think a lot of people need to know that just because our kids are at their house, they are not always, they're not always seen. We still know them, and we still care about them at the same caliber as a brick and mortar teacher does.
I totally agree with that. I am kind of piloting something different. And actually, next year, we're in a totally new platform, as opposed to what we're currently using to teach in our classes and webcams and all that. It'll be a lot more like Zoom. And I'm excited about that. So that way my kids can see each other. Teacher graded assignments and that's another big difference. I don't have as many of those as in a traditional school. I felt like I was always grading in a traditional school, but now a lot of that is automatic. And I just review the data, as we talked about. But there are a few times where I have my students come into a Class Connect and work in front of me, and they turn on their mics and webcams then. So I remember in a traditional school, I would be like, I just wish I could go home with a kid and just see what their life is like at home. And here I can. So here I'm literally sitting in their living room or their maybe an office, or for some of my kids, they school on their beds. They are authentic in how they want to learn. And I get to see that, even if it's just for like about a minute every day when they come and see me. We pop into our like their desk, breakout rooms, and they turn on their mics and webcams, and I get to see them and watch them work for just a little bit. But then when we do those TGAs or a big benchmark, they come in and do that for a longer period of time, and I'm just walking up and down the aisles like you would in a traditional school, just hopping from, in our world, breakout room to breakout room and seeing them work. And that's been the most eye-opening thing for me, having that connection, because I now understand why this student really struggled in school. And, you know, what are they eating? Like one kid was eating chili while doing math the other day. And I both loved that and was like, oh, okay. So those connections are there. I love seeing my kids' faces, even if it's just for a little bit. But being literally in their homes has been super informative in my instruction with these kids and how I relate to them and understand, you know, the struggles that they might be going through. And that's been so powerful and something I would have never got in a traditional school. Yeah, I totally agree with that. The connections are definitely there, and sometimes deeper than what I had in a brick and mortar. Knowing that, we probably talked a lot already about some things, but that teachers would want to know before they go into the virtual world. But what was something that you were like, yes, I wish I had known this before I jumped in, like wish that I would have been able to talk about with my husband before really diving in here?
I think one of the hardest things for me, being in a virtual setting, you know, because I'm not going to sugarcoat it totally, is the idea that when you're in a virtual setting and maybe it's just working for K-12, you wear a ton of hats. So I would consider a K-12 teacher not only a teacher, but, you know, partially a counselor, partially a truancy officer, partially a, I don't know, you know, like a shoulder to cry on. And I think that that's any teacher in general. But the many, many, many roles that we play, because, you know, I can't even say why. It just is kind of the expectation of us as teachers. And I don't consider that a gripe by any means. It's kind of a, you know, I didn't realize that that's what I was going to be taking on when I, took this job. And so I think that knowing that, it would have never deterred me from taking the job. I think it would have just gotten me mentally prepared to do it and maybe do it more efficiently and effectively when I first started, because I was given a homeroom and I was asked to do welcome calls and I was having to track down kids who were absent. And that was not something I had ever done in brick and mortar, because, you know, you have a truancy officer, which we do now. But, I'm not going to lie. I did a really poor job when I first started, because I just didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know the best way to do it. And so I think that if I would have had someone kind of give me like the tips and tricks for, kind of juggling all those responsibilities, I would have been a lot better equipped. I mean, now obviously I'm so much better at it, but I think that, you know, it comes with, you know, falling on your face a few times and realizing, oh my gosh, I haven't checked in with that kid. I need to check in with that kid. Because, you know, I didn't have that structure in place that I have now. So I laugh because it's comical, because I'm just remembering some of the situations when I first started and we were in new school and I had like 80 homeroom kids, and which is not the norm at all, but it was a funny situation that I feel like I wish that I could have just like, I could speak to my past self and be like, Lindsay, everything's going to be fine. You're going to do fine. You're going to love this job, but right now you're just struggling. So,
and yeah. I totally agree with that. And you actually saying 80 students remind me of another difference. I was like, yes, that's another one. Whenever I tell people, they ask me how many kids I have, I'm like, I got 50 this year, and their eyes grow super wide. I'm like, but remember, I am not doing, a lot, like I'm not having to make them sit in their seats. For some of them, I probably should. That's been eye-opening too. But they typically have a learning coach there that is doing that for me. And I'm not doing lunch duty or recess duty or taking them the music and PE. Like, I don't have to do all that. And that's the part where the numbers need. And I'm like, and I do a lot of classes, and the class sizes are still really small, typically less than 15 kids for a small group. So it's still very manageable, and the data is all there, like we talked about. But I totally agree with you. That's one thing that I wish I had known really kind of before jumping in, is how much chasing that I was going to have to do. I did not realize how much chasing I was going to have to do with that amount of kids. And obviously not all of them I'm going to have to chase, but there's still probably 10% of that I do and have to follow up with them. And like I said, today I was doing makeup TGAs and I had 17 kids that didn't take them. So I'm trying to chase those kids down. And we do have a truancy officer, and my school's a little bit different. Most of the K-12 powered schools have this team called FAST that I don't even remember what means now, family academic something. But OVCA is piloting a different program. It's still technically under the FAST umbrella of K-12, but we call our CFAs community family advisors, and they just have a whole family. So they have like 100 kids that they monitor and support and do outings for. They're in their area, so the kids that are in their region are they are invited to outings and so they get that social interaction there. But most of those kids are on track, but they do still have that FAST where when they start to get behind, they get a little more support. So, and then when they get really behind, they get more support. And it's been a really big thing in that chasing area. I'm not having to chase as much thanks to them. So, but that was something I really wish that I would have been told, like you, it wouldn't have deterred me. And I mean, it's something I would probably consider, like, but I was so looking forward to something different and being at home and still being a teacher and being a part of something that was different and was going to meet a lot of kids' needs, that wasn't going to change my mind. But it was something that I wish I had known going in, just so I've been like you, a little more mentally prepared. while being a virtual teacher, what's been like your biggest impact of students? So I know that you're making those connections, they're talking to you on a deeper level probably than they did in a traditional school because they feel safe. I feel that a lot of our kids feel like they're kind of hiding behind their screen when they're able to open up a bit more. But would you tell us where you probably made the biggest difference or biggest impact in a kid's education?
Yes. So last year and the year before, I was actually, I don't even remember the title of my role, I swear. I was an ELA interventionist. So not necessarily like their, I wasn't supplementary to their education. I was an English 9 teacher, and the kids that were in my class were handpicked based on the fact that they were bubble kids. And bubble kids are considered students that are on the cusp of passing throughout, you know, an entire year. So I was able to talk to the 8th grade teachers and ask for recommendations, names of students who needed, you know, that extra push. Ones that were present, they were with us, so they were engaged, but they just really needed that extra attention. And because of that, and I didn't really realize going into it the effect that, and I can't say that the effect that I had on them, because I just feel like that does them such a disservice. But going into it, you're nervous. These are bubble kids. They don't necessarily always know how to advocate for themselves, but they did. And I think about some, especially from last year, that not only learned how to advocate for themselves, but they came in with kind of such a low self-concept and didn't necessarily know what their strengths were. And so I felt like kind of on a daily basis, we would, you know, I would underhandedly help them to explore what they were good at. You know, if they were given an assignment off the bat, they'd be like, I can't do this, or I'm not going to do this, or, you know, stay silent. And by way of just connecting with them, and I know word is constantly used in a virtual setting especially, but I think that, and I don't think that it's necessarily lost its glitter, but at the same time, it's kind of true to form for virtual, that by way of connecting with them, they opened up and they realized that I wasn't just like spewing crap at them, like, you're good at this. Well, lady, you're just telling me that. They actually started believing me and realizing that they could do things. I mean, I have a student that was super quiet last year, and I realized that he was just phenomenal and not necessarily in the fact in education, which he was, but he loved cheerleading. Is a phenomenal cheerleader and is already being scouted by colleges, and he's a sophomore right now. He has flourished in our setting in the fact that he's had reporters do, you know, newspaper articles on him, and K-12 has featured him. I've got a student right now who's in honors. And she wouldn't have explored that option if I wouldn't have pretty much forced her to. So, those connections and really helping the kids, who didn't have, as much confidence as they could have, has really just kind of determined what I am as a teacher and given me a purpose. So. Long-winded explanation for sure.
No, I was about to ask you, I was like, was that the kid I just read about? And so that's really cool that he goes to your school and that you get to be a part of that. That's really exciting.
He's awesome. Actually, really quickly, he was accepted, or I'm sorry, I don't know if the word is accepted, but he's in the biggest tumbling competition in Texas. I want to say it's in February. And this is a very big deal. So he, and when he got accepted, and it's the day of that he shared it on Instagram, he wrote to me thanking me for supporting him. And I'm thinking, kiddo, like, there's, you know, I don't know why I wouldn't. I mean, he, I don't know, he's phenomenal. So yeah.
Well, why wouldn't I support you? Like, yeah, I, those thank you letters sometimes, you know, they really cut deep into your heart, but at the same time, you're like, but this is my job. Like, this is my passion. This is why I do what I do. So no need to thank me. It's like, I don't know if you ever watched Boy Meets World, but, there's Mr. Feeny and, Eric Matthews tells him, you know, thank you for believing me. And he's like, well, bud, this is my job. Like, this is what I'm supposed, like, it's just who I am. So no yes. need to thank you, me. So, but that's yep. amazing. That's me. Really awesome.
Yeah.
The K-12 has been doing that a lot about showing off kids. And I've been really amazed to see how many kids are doing such extraordinary things and how we're able to support them in their dreams, because in a traditional school, they wouldn't have been able to really have that flexibility to pursue those types of things and train for them. And they would have to do traditional homeschooling, and not all parents are up for that. So I love that we're able to meet those needs. Like right now, I have a kid in Australia. His mom's from there and hasn't been there in 5 years, and he's still schooling. I mean, it's, he's watching my recordings of my classes because of the time difference, but the fact that we're able to support families to explore and pursue their dreams and do things that they want to do when they want to do them is something that it kind of falls under that question earlier about, well, something I wish I had known. Well, that's something I wish I would have known. Then, just so I knew that I would be a part of something so amazing and really make that kind of impact in my kids' lives. My story is a little bit different. I'm a fourth grade teacher, so my kids aren't quite pursuing those types of things yet, but they're definitely dreaming about it. But I have a real passion for my kids who are really, really low, really struggling learners. And I think it's because I was a struggling learner, and I think I would have thrived in this type of school if it had been available when I was a kid. But internet and computers were totally not, or were being developed then, were being created. And so it was not an option for me. And my mom and dad were in the medical field and did not, they were definitely advocates for my education, but they couldn't pull me out, and they knew they wouldn't do a better, I'm assuming they thought they wouldn't do a better job than what I'd be getting from professionals in a traditional school. So yeah, I can support that. But working with those kiddos, I have one kid that went from like top of the line, below basic, so low, but now he's considered proficient and doesn't need to come to my small groups anymore. And being a part of that kid's story of being able to now feel confident, and because that was something I talked to his learning coach about, I'm like, does he seem more confident to you? He seems more confident to me. And he's like, oh yeah, he's not afraid to read and speak up anymore. And just being a part of that, being a part of that story and meeting that kid where he was at in his home, literally in his living room, is probably my biggest success story, is that I'm really meeting these kids where they are, literally where they are, and watching them grow and thrive is really, really fun. So mine's a little bit different. I love your story. And so I guess my last question, official question, is what's your go-to? Because I know we're going to have listeners who are already in our world, and I love that. But what's your like go-to engagement instructional strategy that you use that could possibly be in both worlds? But what's your go-to?
You know, the first thing I think about is we have – I haven't been able to do it this year, obviously. I feel like I need to kind of hit on this really quickly. So prior to my current job, like I said, I was an English 9 teacher. Now I am SAT prep and career development specialist. So I am technically, outside of the classroom, I mean, I still teach SAT prep, which is an elective. So I don't see my students every single day. So before this year, we did my PLC and myself, we did what were called Bitmoji days. And I know it sounds really corny, and that I think
I love my Bitmoji. I'm like, I'm super engaged right now. Tell me more.
So I like corny. I think that it's the best way to show students that you are real. And I laugh at myself and to laugh at yourself, to allow students to call you out if you have made a mistake. So we had what were called Bitmoji days. They were on Wednesdays. It was actually a student that came up with the idea, because my PLC member, her name is Tiffany Fischel. She is a million times better than I'll ever be. So look her up. She is phenomenal, and she goes along with all of my crazy ideas. So on Wednesdays, on normal days, we would use Bitmojis, but on Wednesdays, we would kind of like throw every Bitmoji at our kids as possible, and we would ask our students to use their Bitmojis, and it was kind of like an underhanded way, and I think kids probably knew, an underhanded way for us to kind of see our students. So, you know, the bell ringer would be like a would you rather, or a how are you feeling, and they would use their Bitmojis in order to engage with us or to converse with us. And if you don't know what a Bitmoji is, one, I encourage you to look it up and make one. But what it is it uses an icon that looks exactly like you because you've created it to look exactly like you. And then once you've created your Bitmoji, then it you can choose different backgrounds for it, different themes. So it could be like you popping out of a donut or you riding a unicorn. And those are my favorite because they are the most corny available. But if a kid like shakes their head and thinks that it's ridiculous, that I don't care, because it got them engaged. It got them wondering about why you're so weird. And that's the best part of the day, is just really getting the kids to engage, and they will. Even if they're saying that is the most ridiculous emoji, at least, you know, they're engaging, and you might even be able to keep them engaged throughout the entire lesson, the entire year, the entire semester. And I don't think it's far reaching to say that, because until the kids see that you're real, they may not really buy into the content that you're spewing at them. So.
I love a Bitmoji. I do. I love my Bitmoji, and I think she's so cute. So, and we use ours all the time, but I've never thought about asking my kids to make a Bitmoji, and because I use mine as stickers. So when I go through their breakout rooms, and they, like, I found all the ones that say like 100% or round of applause or teamwork makes the dream work, or, you know, like something like that. And I use those like as my sticker. In like a traditional school, I would put like 100%, you get a gold star type thing, or a stamp. Right. So, but I've never thought about asking them to make their own Bitmoji. So I'm going to definitely consider that and see if that's something that they will do. Right. But I love that. Well, thank you so much. Before I let you go, is there anything that didn't come up in our conversation that you just want to say?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's pretty clear that, you know, I love my job, and I fear sometimes that people probably just think that I'm an anomaly. And people that I talk to, not necessarily like people that are listening right now, but I feel sometimes like people that know me and listen to the words that I spew, I'm going to use that word again, about, you know, my job, when they say like, how are you doing? Or how is your job going? Or how do you like your new position? And I'm always just like, it's great. I love it. Even if sometimes I don't necessarily know what I'm doing, or if I'm doing something perfectly. I feel like in this job, in this capacity, I'm able to explore what it means to be, you know, a master teacher, and explore different options that I might not necessarily be able to explore in a different setting. So I have never been happier in my life. And I'm going to throw it out there, even if I don't make the same amount as a teacher that works in my school district where my kids go, I would probably not trade that salary for anything right now. I say that right now because I feel like I'm doing like meaningful work. I'm not taking that at all away from any teacher, because I think that most teachers, they are doing very meaningful work. I'm kind of just speaking for myself, but this is the job that I was built for. And I am so incredibly grateful that this is the job that kind of has been chosen for me, that has been kind of shaped for me, I guess we could say, by whatever force in the universe has given this to me. So I'm so happy that I could do this.
I completely agree with you on that part about the salary. I make more than what the state minimum is, but I will say that the district in my town where my kid goes to, those teachers do make a little bit more than me. But I'm like, they probably deserve it. They do lunch duties. They deal. They have a risk of being assaulted, and or like nowadays, with what's going on in schools, typically school shooting drills and things like that. I'm like, they probably deserve that a little bit more than me. Well, thank you again so much for joining me today. And I can't express my gratitude enough for you hopping on with me, talking about your virtual classroom, what it looks like, and all the successes and comparing and contrasting them. I really enjoyed talking with you, Lindsay, and wish you all the best.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this job. So,
so I do a lot of talking. Thank you. Learning from my experiences. Again, this was my very first conversation, and it was such a good conversation with Lindsay, and I'm so appreciative of her for a variety of reasons. But during this time where teachers are considering to go virtual because of this pandemic and getting their feet kind of wet in that, I thought this episode would be super relevant to them, to be thinking about the things that we didn't think about. And hopefully it doesn't deter them, but definitely hope it's our hope that it will get them in that mind place, so that way they're even stronger than we were when we first started. So thank you all so much for listening. I can't wait to talk to you guys again on Monday as we continue Mini Monday PD, going through those Marzano elements. And you guys have a great weekend. As always, remember, be brave, take a risk, and have fun. See you all next time. Bye.